pathway on proposed pathway. Oh, I'm sorry. Five.
So I'm going to keep my comments very brief. Let Jeff talk about the process here and then get pathway to answer any board's questions. But essentially, as you'll recall, with private equity, we commit money. The money is drawn down, invested, and then harvested 6 or 7 years later, typically. And periodically, we have a policy of going back and recommitting to our existing private equity partners, provided that we think the opportunity set remains and we still have trust in that partner. So this is kind of a programmatic re-up with Pathway to maintain private equity exposure. You'll notice that we touch on a lot of the risks embedded in the marketplace on valuation, et cetera. Just to highlight those for the trustees have not authorized any type of valuation overlay to the private equity. You kind of had the marching orders are maintain exposure. And I think a lot of that will be brought up in the course of the asset allocation study that we're going to have over the next few months about how we approach the private equity program. But for right now, it is maintain exposure. And this is what this recommendation is here, maintain exposure to Pathway. So I'll let Jeff talk about the process and some of the concerns.
Sure. Yeah, so with Pathway, they're one of the core fund of fund managers alongside Adam Street. They currently within the private equity allocation, if you take their market value plus the uncommitted capital, they make up about 23% of our current private equity. Committing to this next fund extends their ability to invest out into future vintage years to maintain that diversification across other private equity funds. Pathway on their relationship with Cicera, we've been with them since 1998, one of the kind of core anchor managers, so it's a long-term diversification play. A new investment would effectively be adding a new diversified product to a diversified pool. So the main benefits for the board is vintage year diversification as we go out. The concerns that we've had over the last couple months as we've talked about private equity as it relates to this mandate and private equity in general is just valuation. The most recent market volatility notwithstanding, the markets have been on a 6-year long bull run. So as these private equity companies are transacting at historic multiples, multiples of their earnings before depreciation, taxes, and amortization, you're seeing that if that's the purchase price, to get out at a profit, it has to continue to go. You have to see this expand. On one side, at the private equity level, we're looking at that broad industry, but it really comes down to the individual portfolio company that may exist, a little bit separate from what you're seeing on a broader macro trend. So that's not to say that the valuation today means that no value can be created. It's just indicative of a trend that a lot of companies are transacting at richer valuations than they had been previously. So that's a concern that we've had.
And part of the role of the fund of funds is to survey the broad universe of what's available out there and find the managers they think are going to be best suited to deploy capital prospectively over the next 3 to 5 years. So that's part of the service that we expect to receive from the fund of funds is that sensitivity about where and when to deploy capital.
Pathway as a manager for us basically provides us relatively inexpensive access to the private equity asset class. Unlike a direct fund, they don't charge a carried interest. There's no preferred return. They just have a management fee. That's being said, however, the underlying funds that they invest in will have carried interest and management fees. So there's a dual layer of fees. One way to think of it may be that the management fee we pay Pathway is what we pay them for making the valuation and allocation decisions that we are not making. So that's, they're managing that on our behalf. But effectively the same story that you've heard before. Large buyout funds typically diversified across a variety of industries, but you'd expect it to be somewhat tech-centric. I wouldn't say it's overwhelmingly tech, but they also invest across buyout special situations in venture. So a very diversified product, again, adding to a diversified pool. So with that, I think we're pretty much wrapped up.
Jeff, I had one question, and it's a mechanical one.
Sure.
On page 4, where we talk about in the little matrix set of economics, I would have thought that we're talking about the $1,430,000 less closed-end investments, less commitments as the net target. It looks like we are picking the, in other words, if we're doubling the objective, which is $715 million, and then I would have thought subtract from that what we are already in or committed to, that would, the balance would be the number we are looking to invest in to go to that doubling. This produces a bigger number than that balance, and am I misunderstanding? Obviously either I am or this is not quite correct.
Sure. This is basically saying to maintain a 10% allocation to private equity, given the capital call and distribution cycle of private equity, you need to earmark about 20% of your capital. With this, and that's across your whole private equity program. So this, you know, $1.1 billion of available spend is across the whole private equity program, not just for this mandate. So if I'm understanding your question correctly, you're saying why doesn't our allocation recommendation match this number?
Well, I'm saying 10% is 715, 20% is 1430. Mm-hmm. Okay, shouldn't we subtract from that what we are already invested in or committed to get to our net number? And this doesn't do that, and that's my question. It's just so I understand what it is we're saying.
Why isn't that one, where it says 1.4, why isn't that also 715, is what you're saying?
I'm saying I would have thought it'd be the 1.430 less the closed-end investments we already have, less the commitments we are already committed to. And that would produce a number different or lower than the $1,117,000 that we're showing. I don't want to get too much in the weeds. I'm just not following what we're saying is my point.
So what this is doing is saying our total available to commit, you know, our including the overcommitment would be 1.4 billion. Our current balance of market value plus outstanding commitments is actually above our 10% target. So that's the negative 314 there. So we're netting that negative 314 out of that to say that on a dollars basis, we're above target right now, between market value and uncommitted or uncalled capital. But to maintain that 10% going forward, we'll need to overcommit.
That's because of the uncalled capital, right? Isn't that the...
One way to look at it would be, say, the less closed-end investment, this 558, that's the current market value of all of our private equity investments. So that would be under the 10% target.
Jeff, let me ask it in one final way, and I promise I won't ask anything further. I would then think that $1,117,000 plus 558 closed-end investments we now own plus 471 in commitments would equal $1,004,000. And it doesn't. It equals considerably more than that. That's what I'm trying to get clear in my own mind.
No, you're right there. Well, let's say we, for the sake of argument, let's say we take the math the way you're proposing it there, and that 1.4 should only be 715. We still have available dollars to commit.
We have available. It's just how much more we have to be committing. Yeah. I'm really asking. Okay.
We're talking degrees of magnitude about how to commit, and we're, in any scenario, we're talking much less than that, but we can circle back on this.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. A couple of general questions, and I maybe it's better to propose these to Pathway, but on page 2, there's a reference to 30% of the commitments in developed international regions. That's pretty general. Is there a focus that you think that they're going to be?
Tends to be Europe and Asia, but their specific language is Europe, Asia, and other developed international.
Other developed international.
So it's the other developed international is more or less a catch-all, but you'd expect Europe and Asia.
Okay. And the second question, it's unfair to, it looks like we may finally be dealing with a correction. So on page 5, it says, current market provides an excellent selling opportunity. Has your thoughts, or do you think Pathways' thoughts have changed on that as a result of the last week or since you wrote this?
You know, this last week, yeah. Yeah, this last week has been a period of volatility, and I think we're, you know, there's a lot of postulation around what exactly is causing it. Is China not going to be the consumer we think it's going to be? Is that going to be compounded with an increase in rates? You know, how does this all play out? I think it's a lot of sentiment as it is right now. I think, you know, does the last week mean that we're in correction territory? It's tough to tell with only 1 week in hindsight. But for this to start flowing through the actual private equity spheres, it's going to take a little while. One, mainly because even though 30% is, you know, non-U.S., 70% will be. So the fundamentals of the United States, you know, corporate balance sheets are still good. There's still demand. There's still consumer demand domestically. But you know, to say that the last week is really going to change the trajectory of this is tough to tell right now.
Yeah, anytime we make these commitments to limited partnerships where we're deploying capital years in the future and we have a general strategy that we're buying into but not a pool that we're buying into, we're always going to face a high degree of uncertainty about what the economic environment and the valuation environment looks like when we deploy that marginal dollar. Because keep in mind, in a fund-to-fund structure, they're going to have 3 years to deploy capital to underlying funds, which then are in turn are typically going to have 3 years to deploy capital. So there could be dollars committed today that aren't actually drawn for 6 years. And so we're talking about deploying capital into an inherently unknowable future. I think, you know, our concern today was the dollar deployed today feels like it's rich. Over the next 6 years, there's going to be rich periods and there's going to be cheap periods, and we're hiring Pathway and other fund-to-funds managers in part because of their ability to deploy prudently there. So how much are we concerned about the peak valuations we saw a couple weeks ago and the correction we saw today? Mm-hmm. Well, this is a lot of variability that impacts the public equity market. The knock-on effects of the private equity market are not going to be seen for months and quarters to come. So much of this is we want to maintain private equity exposure because we believe there's an illiquidity premium. When we deploy that is at the discretion of the manager, and we kind of have to step back from where are we today. I'll tell you today, you know, we're concerned about the dollar deployed today. Mm-hmm. But we commit today and that dollar is deployed over the next 6 years. So you almost have to kind of divorce yourself from where current valuations are when you hire a fund-to-funds manager and trust or research that they have the discipline to deploy those dollars into the future.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Rusty?
Going back to John's question here on page 4 again. sorry to belabor this, but again, you put in here the 100% overcommitment of 1.4 million. I'm not sure if it should be that. If it's overcommitment, it should be, in my mind, 715 million.
Yeah.
And so that would mean then the estimate available would be 401 instead of the 1.117.
Yeah. I think you're probably accurate there.
Okay. So yeah. Did that clear it up?
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
But we'll go back and have that discussion internally. But let's say that is the scenario. There's still $400 million available to commit.
Plenty of money, yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty to cover the $50 million
today and going forward.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 Any other questions before Tim and Jeff bring in our guests?
Have you had any capital commitments in the last, capital calls in the last week from Pathway?
In the last week?
Yeah. Or just before?
Because
I'm thinking it's a time to take advantage.
We've had more distributions than capital calls over the past.
Saw the distribution, yeah.
Yeah, the distributions, I mean, I think from all of our private equity funds, it's been a distribution heavy year. relatively light on the capital calls. I suspect we still have dry powder that we've previously committed to Pathway and to other private equity managers they haven't yet.
Do you know if they're using it?
No.
They're using it. You know, there's a time lag effect here where the underlying funds are the deployers of that capital. And so the underlying funds have got to respond to the market environment, find a company, negotiate with them, come to terms, and then it's got to filter back up through to us. So there's usually 3 to 6 month lag.
And okay. Looking at page 2, you see a percent committed in the Cicera program overview, ranging from 100 to 104, 104, 103, with an average of 101. So the Pathway has committed the capital to underlying funds. Those underlying fund managers have to then deploy the capital, make capital calls to Pathway that they pass through to us.
Yeah.
So has Pathway put our money to work? Yes. Have the underlying managers?
They're in the process.
They're in the process. as you can see, again, on page 2 at the bottom, the amount
what
of
I'm looking at.
The remaining commitment, yes. That's the underlying managers that haven't yet called that capital.
I would say, in general, we would expect more investment activity in the second half of the year, provided that the valuations are at a more attractive level. It's been a net selling environment in the first half of the year with a correction that would lead us to believe it's more likely to have a net buying environment in the second half of the year.
I hope so.
And on the taking advantage of the recent market volatility, these funds aren't really designed for that. They, they'll call capital as often as they close a deal, and they're likely not going to close a deal, surrounding volatility over the course of a week. So.
So you should have bought Apple 3 days ago.
These are not trading strategies.
I'd still like to buy. It's coming back, but there's still room.
Okay. Anything further? If not,
invite
them in.
1,000-point swings. We need to word volatility.
Day traders love it.
Yeah, that's right.
Hour traders.
They're always making money.
15 quarter-hour traders love it.
The traders like it. More deals. More deals.
More deals.
More. More transactions.
Just make sure I remember that. Brian Hess, read it on each one of these. This is a public.
See pictures of these guys on the market floor doing this. But they're the ones that are also making the trades.
How am I gonna put
they're
gas
getting paid anyway.
I got to put gas in my Rolls Royce. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
You just stepped back into the role of chair.
Social chairman.
All right, I'm going to ask that you introduce yourselves and then make your presentation. You do have a small print notice that is proprietary, confidential, and a trade secret, and this is a public meeting, and you need to waive that restriction.
We do.
Okay. Thank you. You're welcome. Go ahead and make your presentation.
Yep. So before we start, I'd just like to, we've had a very long relationship with Contra Costa County. It goes back to 1998, and I've personally been involved the entire time, and we're very grateful for your participation and your support, and so I wanted to be able to thank you for that first off, and we obviously appreciate the opportunity today to be able to talk to you about the possibility of adding to the program, and so we look forward to doing that. I'm Jim Reinhart. And I'm a founder of the firm, and Jason Jenkins and Vince D. We're all owners and partners of Pathway. And we'll talk a little bit more about the individuals in a few minutes. So on page 2 of the presentation, just a brief agenda, I'm going to give you a little bit of an update on Pathway, and we'll try to make that brief, and then we'll talk about the program that we're presenting to you today, and then we'll wrap it up with a discussion of the progress and the performance of the portfolio that we've put together for you so far. Just a preview of that last part, the program that we put together. We feel very good about that program. The performance is strong, outperforming public benchmarks, outperforming private benchmarks. And when you look at it in the context of the overall Contra Costa Pension Fund, for the last 10 years, we've been substantially additive to that performance being somewhere between 300 and 400 basis points over the contra costa pension fund return. So we feel really good about the place in the in your program and how it's doing and how it's progressing. So we'll talk more about that as we proceed. So turning to page 4, the brief overview. Private equity is the only thing the Pathway does. It's the only thing we've ever done. So we're focused on being the best private equity advisor we can be and nothing else. The founders of Pathway founded the Special Investments Division at Wilshire Associates in 1983, and I'm one of those individuals that was doing that. We were there for 8 years, and then we established Pathway in 1991. So we're about to celebrate our 25th anniversary at Pathway next year, and we've been doing this for a very long period of time. We have about $30 billion assets under management at this point. We have an investor base that includes investors of all types from all around the world. We're independent, 100% owned by our partners. There's 19 partners in the firm, 100 employees, plus 19 partners. We have locations in Irvine, California, Rhode Island, London, and Hong Kong. So turning to page 5, the investor list. The first thing I want to point out is you're not on this investor list, and that's because you've asked us not to put your name in marketing materials. So we honored that by not, but it's not an oversight or anything like that. We would like to have your name on here, but you've asked us not to. So that's the first thing I'd like to point out. Secondly, as I said previously, it's a list of investors that are all from all over the world of all types. But there's a couple of things that make it special. One of them is that many of these relationships, like the one we have with you, are very, very long-term relationships. In fact, some of these go back to the early 1980s. And, you know, Bristol Myers, Iowa Public Employees, J.C. Penney, Nevada. These are relationships we've had for over 30 years. So it's a very long list of investors with long ties to Pathway, and that's important. There's also, even aside from the relationship with us, there are investors with a lot of experience in the asset class itself. And when we sell ourselves to general partners as being a good investor for them to have, one of the things we tell them is we have a very solid, long-term list of sophisticated and experienced investors, you know, within our program, and that should be something that they consider valuable, and they do. So it's a good list from that standpoint. One of the things that distinguish us from others, briefly on page 6, first of all, our track record. I mentioned that we started doing this in 1983. So we made our first investment in private equity in 1983, before the private equity asset class actually even existed. So we've been doing this for a long time. And we've invested in the asset class every year since then. So 32-year track record of investing consistently in the asset class. And we've been one of the biggest investors during that time frame. And certainly one of the oldest. And as far as experience goes, again, going back to 1983, the individuals here at Pathway that were involved in that first investment in 1983 are still involved today, and I'm one of those again, and still active and plan to be active for some time. So we have a lot of long-term track record, a lot of experience, and very stable organization, which I'm going to talk about more in a couple of minutes. As far as alignment of interest goes, we are independent, 100% owned by our partners, as I mentioned. We invest alongside of you in the same securities, in the same manner that you invest. So whatever return you earn, we earn. We don't take a carried interest. The carried interest would give us the ability to earn a better return than you earn, and that's not what we're in it for. So we have a very strong alignment of interest. Manager selection is the most important thing to us. We're investing in the best managers, the most successful managers in the world. And that's the key consideration when we make an investment is this experience and success that these managers have had previously. Moving on to page 7, we invest across the private equity spectrum.
Could I ask you just back on 6 for just a quick moment? Describe in a little bit more depth what a highly selective investment rate of 3%. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Right. So on average, if you look at the investments that we review each year, and then you take the number we actually invest in. We invest in about 3% of those. So I think the average is 450 funds that we would review, and we invest in about 3% then on average. So we're very selective. As I mentioned, manager selection is key for us.
Okay, thank you.
So as I said, buyout, special situations, venture capital, debt-related strategies, we invest all across those categories. We've reviewed thousands of those funds in our experience. We've invested in hundreds. We know how to do that. And then lastly, on the pathway update, this page 8 shows a list of all the owners and partners of the firm and gives you a graphic illustration of how long we've been working together. And I mentioned the stability of the firm. Since the inception of Pathway, we've had two investment partners leave, and both of them were retirements. They didn't go to work for anybody else, they just retired. And if you include all of the senior level professionals within Pathway, so that would be, say, vice president and above, we've lost 4 investment people in the history of our firm. So most of our clients tell us that not only is it the most stable private equity firm they've ever seen, but the most stable manager they've ever seen. And it's, you know, it's something that's very important to us. We treat everybody very well. We give people responsibility. We bring them up gradually and deliberately, and we pay people well. And we like the stability. It's much easier to operate in an environment of stability.
Liked your chart on page 8. I don't know if I've seen one like it before, but it really gives you a very quick graphic right. illustration of the length of time of involvement and very, very easy to digest. So I thought it was a great chart.
Thank you. Jason here's our newest partner, and he's on the bottom of the list. The fact that some of the other partners have been here so long, it makes his 11 years look short. But I mean, 11 years is a pretty long time to be
a lifetime
to be with one firm. So we sort of joked with the possibility of kind of putting those little lightning stripes in some of the longer terms and shortening the bars so they don't look so small. But that's what it's designed for, is to give you a quick snapshot of how much time we have actually working together.
Thanks, Jim. So the next section takes a closer look at Pathway Private Equity Investors 8. So despite the name, this is actually the 26th fund-to-fund vehicle that Pathway has constructed, the first being the original fund-to-fund vehicle that we constructed on your behalf back in 1998. This fund will be similar to each of those prior funds. We're going to continue to use our proven strategy and approach, the same approach that we've developed and refined over the last 25 years to invest this fund. The fund has a target fund size of $300 million. We've seen very strong reception in the marketplace to this, both from existing investors as well as new investors. As with prior funds, we'll be investing this in funds over a 3-year period. We'll be targeting both buyout, special situations, venture capital, as well as debt-related strategies. And those investments will be global, with a focus on developed markets. The majority of capital, however, will be invested in the United States. We're targeting a final close for this in the fourth quarter. We've had 3 closes to date. So taking a closer look at the portfolio construction, we're going to use our manager selection focus to construct this portfolio. Our objective is to create a broadly diversified portfolio, so both in terms of strategy, stage, region, and importantly, time. So as I mentioned before, we're going to be committing this fund to partnerships over a 3-year period. Those partnerships are then going to find investments over a 5-year period. And by investing over that extended period of time, it ensures that this fund will not be overly exposed to any one single point in the market cycle. So we'll have broad diversification there in terms of time, which is important. In terms of target investment strategies, the majority of capital is going to be focused on the acquisition funds or buyout related funds. Those are going to be spread across small, mid-size, and large size buyout funds that target both value and growth oriented strategies. Up to 40% will be invested in what we've defined as special situation partnerships. So those are industry-specific funds, funds that utilize a multi-strategy approach, and then debt-related funds. And then in addition to that, the balance will be invested in venture capital, up to 25%. And we'll utilize various investment structures, primary fund commitments, secondary fund purchases, as well as co-investments. When everything is said and done with this fund, and we've fully committed it, though, how we construct this portfolio will depend heavily on the quality of managers that we see in the marketplace. So we're not going to force money into any one single strategy just for the sake of getting an allocation to a particular area. The most important thing in our strategy is going to be manager selection.
Do your deal flow opportunities roughly
break consistent with your geographic region emphasis? You know, worst case, well, not worst case, one case 70-30, otherwise 85-15. In other words, do the opportunities that come to you from which you take the selective 3% typically percentage-wise break by the region you've described?
So there is a little bit of difference there. So we have offices in Hong Kong, London. We're a very global firm, but I would say we tend to be a little bit more focused on developed markets, so both North America as well as Europe. We're also aggressively looking at opportunities in Asia and Latin America, but we're being much more selective in those areas, just given the development of the private equity marketplace in those regions.
Okay.
And it also varies a little bit by time, too. So we might be in a particular vintage, we might be 100% U.S. and zero rest of the world. The next vintage might be 60-40. But over the course of the investment program, it'll average out to these ranges.
Okay. Second question. What are your determining factors on who has the opportunity for co-investment?
So the co-investment program is designed for one purpose. It's to gain additional exposure to managers we like and think highly of at attractive terms. Obviously, no management fee and no carry. And what we have is a pre-selected group within our managers that we define as appropriate with co-investing alongside. So that's a subset of that. And that subset is based on the nature of their strategy. They tend to be have a higher hit rate, so less losses. They tend to focus in on less risky strategies. So those are very important aspects. But the key component of our co-investment strategy is we're only co-investing alongside managers that we have already done or completed our due diligence on and invested alongside.
And as far as the allocation goes, each of our investors in a fund that offers a co-investment gets a pro rata allocation of that co-investment. Okay. Based on its investment.
So taking a closer look at this vehicle, the fund has gotten off to a strong start. We've been pleased with our sourcing efforts. We have identified and committed to date in 7 funds as well as 2 co-investments. These vary in terms of size and strategy, but consist of what we believe to be some of the most reputable managers in the industry. These managers possess stable and experienced teams, proven access, and successful multi-cycle experience. In this environment that we're experiencing today, one that's been characterized by a high degree of volatility, investing in managers that have proven the ability to generate value in both up markets as well as down markets is very important, and that's certainly the case with these managers that we've identified on this list. One other point I'd like to make is that each of the managers here, demand for these funds was very strong. They were oversubscribed in nature. Despite that aspect, Pathway was able to gain significant exposure to these. In many cases, were one of the largest, if not the largest LP. And that has ramifications to this fund and in the fact that in negotiating the terms for this partnership, we can use our size to impact things like management fees, carried interest distribution waterfalls, and non-economic terms such as key person provisions. And having that size as a large in LP is very important in that process. Looking forward, we're very excited about the pipeline. We have good visibility on the funds returning to market over the next 6 months. This includes a number of managers that we've been investing in or investing alongside for many years now, and we've gained very good access to. We're scheduled to close on 3 partnerships in the next 30 days. We've listed those partnerships out in the top of slide 13. And then we have an additional 3 opportunities that are in various stages of due diligence that, provided they make it through our due diligence process, we will be committing to in the fourth quarter.
John, ask a question on the Summit 4 fund. You described something called a late-stage venture investment. That suggests to me that that's not seed money or so-called angel capital or something like that. It's a little bit further down the development line. So is it in advance of a possible IPO?
That's you're absolutely right. Late stage refers to companies typically that not are in their seed or early stage rounds. They typically are an established, somewhat established business model, perhaps even earning revenues, and in many cases even even some profits. But nevertheless, these are very high growth emerging companies. Yes, the short answer is that many of these late stage companies are certainly in advance of an IPO. We would differentiate another strategy that we think is typically gets layered in between a late stage venture capital strategy and a pre-IPO strategy, and that's a pre-IPO growth equity strategy.
So even another slice.
So, and the reason that distinction is important is because we think that the best managers are able to access and create value in the earlier stages and enable themselves and their investors, including us here, to capture more of the upside before a company hits the public markets. Yeah. And there's certainly viable and credible strategies that target specifically pre-IPO growth stage companies, and we would consider those strategies. But Summit Venture Capital 4 is a little bit different than that.
Can you give us any examples of companies that exactly have gone through this development phase and have spun out as an IPO that we might recognize?
So one particularly interesting story in your portfolio that you've seen span the cycle, the normal cycle of a company development is a company called Zayo. An interesting investment that was made in 2007. This company actually is in the fiber optics space. And if you can recall, in fiber optics, back in the early or the late 1990s, there was a tremendous build out and there was oversupply. And the sector became very distressed. Many companies went out of business. There was just too much of it in the ground. One of the managers in your portfolio teamed up with an aspiring entrepreneur who saw the opportunity there to begin purchasing up this fiber optic cable. And using a platform strategy, we funded on a multi-stage basis additional acquisitions. And they're able to grow that company quite large. It went public in 2014. It's been a very successful investment. And I think it's a good example of private equity being opportunistic. This entrepreneur knew that, you know, we're all using cell phones and the connectivity issues and bandwidth issues at one point in time would lead to a shortage of this, and he was able to take advantage of this.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, just quickly, another example would be in your portfolio would be Facebook. One of your mid-stage managers invested in Facebook's C round. So not their seed, not their earliest stage rounds, but well before, several years before they actually went public. And of course, they're publicly traded now in a very successful company.
Thanks.
So the next section, beginning on page 15, provides a review of Contra Costa County's existing investments in four pathway-managed private equity fund-to-fund vehicles. The summary is that the portfolio continues to perform well, outperforming both private equity and public market indices. Each of the four funds is fully committed to underlying investment partnerships and is comprised of funds managed by highly experienced and successful general partners. The portfolio has generated significant amounts of distributions for Contra Costa County in each of the past few years. And is well positioned to continue capitalizing on opportunities in the current market environment. Page 15 illustrates Pathway's long-term relationship with Contra Costa County. Contra Costa County initially committed $30 million as the sole limited partner to PPEF-1 in 1998. As Jason mentioned, this PPEF-1 happens to be Pathway's first fund-to-funds vehicle, so it's very special to us. PPEF-1's commitment size was increased three subsequent times in three additional tranches, bringing the fund's total size to $125 million. Since then, Contra Costa County has committed to three additional Pathway-managed funds, most recently $70 million to PPF I-7 in 2013. Page 16 provides a status summary of each of the four funds, as well as the combined portfolio. Overall, the portfolio is very well diversified across buyout, venture capital, and special situations partnerships, and is weighted towards the developed markets of the U.S. and Europe. PPEF 1 is fully committed to 42 underlying investment partnerships. Those partnerships are no longer actively making new investments and are instead focused on creating value and monetizing or selling their investments. In fact, as we'll see over the next couple of slides, a large portion of the distributions that the combined portfolio is generating is being driven by partnerships within the PPEF 1 portfolio. PPEF 2008 is also fully committed to underlying partnerships and is approaching fully invested status. 76% of PPEF 2008 has already been drawn down and actually invested in underlying portfolio companies. PPEF I-6 and I-7 are also fully committed to investment partnerships. However, as expected, given the age of those two funds, both those funds remain firmly in their active investment phase. It's important to note that the remaining uninvested capital in both PPEF I-6 and PPEF I-7 is expected to be drawn down and invested gradually over the next several years, which should help the portfolio maintain its vintage year and calendar year diversification. Overall, we are pleased with the composition, the diversification, and the progress being made by each of these four funds.
Question, if I could, John, I'm sorry. On commitments by strategy, it looks to me as if your buyout commitment by strategy or by fund has dropped off a bit.
Yeah.
And in place of that has been an increase in the special situations. The VC has remained largely flat.
Yeah.
Give us an example of a special situation and why it seems to be kind of trending more in that direction.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation. And so a special situations partnership would include partnerships that pursue a variety of different private equity strategies. So for instance, a traditional buyout strategy, also some growth equity, and potentially a distressed or control strategy. So a partnership that pursues not just one, but several strategies. Another example of a special situations partnership would be a partnership that is focused solely on one segment of the economy or one industry sector, an energy-focused buyout manager, or a software and technology-focused buyout manager. And your observation is a function of several things. And one is, as the private equity markets have matured over time, what we've seen is that private equity firms, general partners, have tended to become much more specialized. And they've developed over many years, just deep domain industry expertise in a particular vertical segment, say software or energy. They've developed a network of contacts and deal flow sources within that segment, and so they've specialized. And as they specialized, where a fund would have previously been classified roughly in the old manner as a buyout fund, they're being classified as a special situations fund.
So that trend, is that trend likely to continue into 8? So that the special situations
probably.
Would probably, yeah, okay.
Probably.
Fine.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
When you talk about specialties, they drill down even farther. Let's say the energy, then they'll only be specific maybe in oil or natural gases.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we've seen the energy spectrum in particular, segment into 4 or 5, real areas of focus. There's of course upstream oil and gas. There's downstream, which are the refineries. Midstream, of course, everything that kind of connects both sectors. And then there's international managers that target international opportunities, or just those here locally in North America. So you're absolutely right. A lot of segmentation.
Software as well.
Software, we've seen a number of very very, very good, very expert firms that have, you know, again, very deep domain expertise in software. And the software industry is very interesting because it's, in some sense, it's undergoing a very transformative and disruptive undercurrents currently in terms of, you know, the shift from locally hosted, locally you know, managed software and databases onto the cloud. And it's disrupting a very large and established you know, industry. And part of that disruption, we're seeing private equity firms target just that, you know, that shift. And that's absolutely a current trend that we're seeing.
And one of the things that both of your questions expose is the evolution of the private equity asset class and really what the valuation proposition used to be versus what it is now. And it, you know, you think back in the 1980s when buyouts were being done, less specific domain expertise was necessary because there were other things they could do with leverage and with efficiency and things like that, refocusing companies on target, you know, core competencies. That's what was being done many, many years ago. Now, in order to create value, they have to be more specific. They have to be more knowledgeable of the actual industries. They have to be able to add operational improvements, and it has to be more specific to the industries that they're working in, and even within the industries, to certain segments of those industries. So that's why, you know, both of your questions, I think, address the same thing.
Slide 17 provides a financial summary of each of the prior four prior funds, as well as each tranche of PPEF 1. The blue highlighted part of the table highlights the attractive and consistent performance of each of the funds across various time periods. Other than PPEF I-7, which is less than 2 years old and is still actively in its investment phase, each of the other funds have generated double-digit net returns in almost every single time period shown here, and there are no negative returns in any of the time periods. So again, just a very consistent return profile being generated by the portfolio. Each of the fund's performance has strengthened since the last time we saw you, which we expected at the time, as the since the underlying funds have become more seasoned and have had more time to fully develop and execute upon their value creation strategies. In particular, the since inception annualized net IRR of PPEF 2008 and PPEF I-6 were actually negative when we saw you 2 years ago, and they're now, you can see, firmly in the positive, 9.9% for 2008 and 7.4% for PPEF I-6. Given the large number of underlying investment partnerships in both PPEF 2008, PPEF I-6, and then certainly PPEF I-7 that are still in their development phase and still actively creating value, our expectation is that these returns will continue to strengthen over time. One other thing that we'd like to highlight just quickly on this table is that the strong level of distributions generated by PPEF 1, which is the fifth line from the top in this table. As of March 31st, PPEF 1 has generated total distributions of $113 million compared to contributions of $120 million. As of last week, that 113 is now $121 million, meaning PPEF 1 has reached that point where it has returned more capital back to Contra Costa County than it has received in contributions, and the remaining approximately $60 million represents gains for the pension plan. Page 18 shows the performance of the combined portfolio over the 10-year and since inception periods compared to the S&P 500. The portfolio returns shown here are net of all underlying partnership fees, expenses, carried interest, as well as pathway fees. And despite the very strong performance of the S&P 500 over the past 6 years, the portfolio continues to outperform that the S&P 500 by 330 basis points each year over the since inception period, which is now 16 years long. Again, given the high level of underlying partnerships within the three most recent funds that are still in their development phase, we expect this outperformance to increase over time. In fact, we recently updated this slide through June 30. As you know, financial statements are typically lagged in private equity. And the annualized outperformance increased by 20 basis points over the since inception period. So it's now 350 basis points each year over the past 16 years. Slide 19 illustrates the performance of the portfolio based on vintage year returns against industry median benchmarks, private equity industry benchmarks. And we view this as a measure of the additional value or excess value or alpha generated through manager selection. And as you can see, the portfolio has strongly outperformed the median industry returns in nearly every vintage year, with an average outperformance each year of 632 basis points. Only one vintage year out of the 14 has a negative return, and 11 of the 14 have double-digit net returns.
What's as between comparing to the S&P 500 or the Borg or Burgess, which for us is the more relevant measure, do you think?
Yeah. I think for in your position, both.
My law firm has a spot for you.
That's absolutely useless to you. But I think they're both important. For us, our number one job is to outperform the private equity industry average.
Right.
And so that's page 19. That's for us. That's the most important thing. And of course, you know, we also believe that private equity can outperform public markets by a substantial margin over the long term. And so page 18 is also important to us. And my point in my remark is, I guess, depending on are you thinking about an asset allocation decision, one becomes more important than the other. But they're both important. It's just a short answer.
And what's the story, if there's a backstory on 2013 in the Burgess number?
So 2013 is off to a fantastic start, 23% net IRR. That performance is actually being driven by three primary partnerships and two secondary partnerships that not only have already generated strong performance, they've actually generated multiple realized exits, meaning these valuations, these returns, are not based solely on unrealized write-ups of valuations, which, you know, they're rooted in actual realizations. You know, for instance, one of the partnerships in this vintage year is a software buyout investor that you know, kind of in the spectrum that we talked about earlier. They acquired a company. They carved it out from Intuit a few years back. It was a company making software to help financial services companies with their ATMs and online banking. And they were able to execute their value creation strategies, and they sold it for a very handsome return to a publicly traded financial services software company not too long ago. And that's one of the drivers of this return. So
it stood out markedly, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, it may not hover around that level. You know, I think it has a good chance of being, you know, kind of in the high teens, even as it continues maturing.
You said it was ATM technology?
Yeah. Software to allow banks to integrate their ATM hardware with online banking, et cetera.
I notice, like at the bank now, you can put your checks and your money all together, and somehow figures it all out. And it's amazing how the technology's.
Well, I haven't gone.
It's a little scary too sometimes.
The Chinese company I can tell you about. Yeah. How to put it all together.
And then finally, on page 20, shows the portfolio's distributions on a net basis each year since 2009, net to Contra Costa County. Distributions, as you can see, have increased steadily over the past 5 years, reaching $22 million in both 2013 and 2014. We expect distribution activity to remain fairly robust over the coming years, simply due to the ongoing development and progress being made in each of the underlying investment funds. And in fact, kind of updating this one-half number through last week, we're closer to $17 million already. So we're well in, we're well on track to meet or exceed last year's total.
It's going to be an interesting visit 2 years from now. Quite.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
It was easier than the last time. You've said something earlier, and I don't know if I'm going to formulate the right question, because you said it in passing, but it had to do with the manner in which unrealized investments are valued. Are those, again, disclaimer, this could be a dumb question, are those investments marked other than to market in terms of trying to value what the expected value?
It's another question that doesn't have an easy answer. They're not marked to market like the market is, but the market is a guideline for them. So their actual auditors force them to do. There's a time not too long ago where private equity managers wouldn't value their companies at all. They would leave them at cost until they took them public or until they sold them. And they were very, very conservative in, for the most part in that regard. Then the auditing community began to object and force some standards on them. But I still think the private equity industry is somewhat conservative, and to the extent they don't have to mark up something completely to market, they won't. They'll do it as far as they think will pass their audit. So they're generally conservative compared to public markets. And in the most part, one of the things we look for when we invest in a general partner is what is their last valuation round compared to what do they exit these companies at? Is it usually higher or is it usually lower? Are they usually overvaluing something or usually undervaluing something? And we tend to prefer those who are more conservative. So even within the industry and then within your portfolio, they tend to even be slightly more conservative.
So who actually marks the value?
The GP sets the value. The valuation committee, which we're often a part of, that consists of limited partners, generally oversees that process. And then it has to be run through their auditors.
Okay, so there's a secondary check on that valuation.
Jim, this is level 1, 2, or 3. I'm assuming in terms of how it's valued, in other words, market to almost no value, it's never in excess of what is perceived to be fair market value. It's either at or lower.
Correct.
That you market to.
If we saw a situation where a general partner was marking their portfolio companies below what they were able to sell them for, that's a big red flag in our due diligence process. And to give you an example, if you look back at your portfolio, historically, the unrealized positions get sold somewhere between 50 to 100% above what they're carried at. So there's a good amount of value creation that occurs at the time of exit.
Okay.
Interesting. So that's the extent of our prepared comments. As we've said several times, we feel very good about these programs, and we'd love to have you continue with us.
Just a quick question. With Thomas Leder's retirement, does he affect our portfolio any, or does he do anything with our portfolio?
So Tom is in our Rhode Island office. The founders have had a very long relationship with Tom that dates back to when he was at New York Common. But there's been quite a bit of planning ahead of his retirement. So we brought on another very experienced investment professional that used to work in Massachusetts, Wayne Smith. And he's come on, and he's now a partner there. We have one other partner there as well. So we're fully staffed there. He's not directly been part of the Contra Costa relationship, but he's been indirectly involved as a member of the investment team.
So if you turn it back to page 8, just real briefly, it'll give you a sense of how we look at transition and succession and all that. And as we mentioned before, we have a tremendous amount of stability with partners at all ages, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. We've been thinking about succession for 20 years in terms of how we plan the organization, the way we give responsibility to younger people, the way we allocate client responsibilities and investment responsibilities and people that sit on the investment committee. It's something that's top of mind. So when a retirement like this happens, it's not an issue for us in any regard. He's one of 19. We've already had two people retire, as I mentioned before. They're both seamless, and we expect this one to be the same.
Okay. Any further trustee questions? In that case, thank you all very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
I think it's at the beginning. I'm the end.